This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Tweeted and out. White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus is out with a tweet. In his place, General John F. Kelly, the Homeland Security Secretary.
Focus on fundamentals. The Dow closes at a record despite all the chaos in the Capitol. But at what point will Washington start to really matter to investors?
Up in smoke, the FDA wants to make cigarettes less addictive, and that burned a hole in a handful of tobacco stocks. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Friday, July 28th.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Developments out of Washington late this afternoon. President Trump's chief of staff, Reince Priebus, is out. The president broke the news in his favorite way over Twitter, writing, quote, "I am pleased to inform you that I have just named General Secretary John F. Kelly as White House chief of staff. He is a great American and a great leader. John has also done a spectacular job at Homeland Security. He's been a true star of my administration." Mr. Priebus is the former Republican Party chairman, and he clashed with other officials in the White House, including the new director of communications, Anthony Scaramucci. John Harwood joins us tonight on the phone from Washington. John, welcome. Good to be with you. How big a surprise, John, is Priebus's departure, and how big a surprise is the appointment of Kelly as chief of staff?
Well, I think the departure of Reince Priebus wasn't a surprise. The timing was a surprise. I had been talking to people during the day who were saying, you know, sometime in the next couple of weeks, certainly by Labor Day. So that wasn't unexpected. John Kelly had been rumored as a candidate for the job. So had other people, including Gary Cohn, the former Goldman Sachs executive, Dina Powell, also formerly from Goldman Sachs. And the real question now is, what does this mean? How does it change the functioning of the White House? Most things from the Trump administration have revolved around the president personally, not his aides. But we'll see whether General Kelly can bring a greater amount of discipline.
What other changes might be possible? For instance, Mr. Bannon was targeted recently by Mr. Scaramucci. What do you see ahead, John?
It is very difficult to predict this administration, to say the least. The most conspicuous potential change that has been signaled is the departure of the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. Now, don't know if that's actually going to happen. The president has suggested as much. I had someone close to Trump tell me today they expected Bannon to stay. But I don't think you could make a heavy bet on any of this. One thing I think is interesting, though, I was talking to an ally of Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, who said that the departure of Priebus is essentially untethering the Trump White House from the Republican Party, and in fact predicted that the next phase of the Trump presidency may be to go to war against the Republican Congress and blame them for his problems.
Well, he was, Mr. Priebus, certainly part of the Republican Party establishment, former chairman of the party. So what could this change mean, not only for the operation of the White House, John, but for the president's policy agenda?
Well, if General Kelly can bring a greater amount of focus and discipline to the White House, and to the president, for that matter, it is possible that they could have a better experience with tax reform, which is the next big reform up, than they have had with health care reform. Obviously, a lot of the problems on health care were inherent to that issue, and I think a lot of the responsibility lies with the Congress and not with President Trump. But General Kelly is not experienced in politics, and one of the advantages of having Reince Priebus there was, in fact, you're trying to get an agenda through with Republicans on Capitol Hill, and General Kelly does not have any track record of doing that.
All right, John Harwood, thanks very much. Working late on the weekend night. John Harwood in Washington.
Well, while the drama in Washington continues, Wall Street is blocking out the noise and staying squarely focused on the fundamentals. Earnings and global growth are all supporting stocks, which saw the Dow Jones Industrial Average close at a new high. The blue chip Dow Index advanced 33 points to 21,830. The Nasdaq lost 7, and the S&P 500 fell 3. For the week, the Dow was the big winner. Bob Pisani has more on what's driving the market.
The stock market has a high-class problem right now. An awful lot is going right. First and foremost, earnings have been strong. We're past the halfway mark. Earnings are up more than 10% year over year. Revenues are up 5%. Estimates are strong for the third quarter as well. Valuations are higher, all right, but the markets are comfortable as long as there is earnings growth and the economy is improving. And the global economy has been improving. Money is flowing into European stocks this year. The credit markets are in great shape. Defaults are low and a recession nowhere on the horizon. Next, the dollar's been dropping, providing a tailwind for exporters. And rates are low. And the Fed's reiterated this week that rates will stay low for a long time and nobody's expecting a rate hike until December. All right, what could go wrong with this? Yes, Washington's a mess. But the markets don't care as long as tax cuts are somewhere on the rise. And 2018 has proven good enough so far. There's definitely some kind of premium in the market for a tax cut, but we don't know how big this premium is. Another issue that is sort of puzzling market watchers is geopolitical risk. Today, the North Koreans fired a missile into the Sea of Japan, but the markets shrugged it off. Janus's Bill Gross said earlier this week that a significant geopolitical event like North Korea would usually carry a higher risk premium, but so far, that hasn't been the case. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
So what, if anything, will it take for the market to turn its attention to Washington in a more focused way? Jeff Moore is senior analyst at Global Risk Insights, and he joins us now to discuss. Jeff, how can the stock and bond markets be so zen when Washington is so not?
I think that the precedent was set a long time ago as far as the character of this administration and the interplay between the White House and Congress. So there's a little bit of a desensitivity issue as far as how that translates into market risks. But I think it's going to take something substantial and maybe from outside the domestic scene to actually introduce some of that volatility.
Would that be, or might that be, North Korea?
I think so. But more than North Korea's actions, I think more importantly, judged by the market, is going to be the reactions of the Trump administration. Any escalation as far as military action on the Korean Peninsula would be something that introduces a spike in volatility that could really unravel a lot of the complacency that's been going on in the market so far.
A spike in volatility would be the most favorable outcome, it might well seem, if something big happens on the Korean Peninsula. Let's talk a little bit about the GOP agenda. I don't want to just call it the Trump agenda. A big part of it seems to have, for now, gone down in flames on health care. It is no easy push to push tax reform through, infrastructure, immigration. There are a lot of things standing out there. Which of those has the potential to move the needle market-wise one way or another? Or the most potential, I should say.
Yeah, I think tax reform probably has the most potential of actually following through because you probably have a higher level of consensus among Congress and the White House of getting some tax reform policy pushed through and signed into law. But the question is how they're able to do that when they've got it second or third on the list behind health care, which so far has been a debacle.
You know, Jeff, we just had John Harwood on the phone, and he mentioned that he was hearing from sources that the next move by the White House may be to go after Congress because of the lack of movement on things like health care. If we start to get mutiny between Congress and the administration, what do you think Wall Street's reaction would be to that sort of a development? Hypothetical at this point, certainly.
Yeah, I think outside of some foreign policy issue that creeps up and escalates, that open mutiny between Congress and the Trump administration, if the Trump administration were to go after the Republican Party and the Republican majorities in Congress, that could really escalate to the point of investors really coming to terms with some of these agenda items, their possibilities of actually getting passed really, really sinking. And to this point, none of that has actually been passed through Congress, and you would think the markets would have reacted negatively to that already. But this kind of open political warfare between the White House and Congress, being of the same political party, would be really something that causes investors to question where this is going as far as an economic policy standpoint.
All right, Jeff, have a nice weekend. Jeff Moore with Global Risk Insights.
To the economy now, which rebounded this spring after a weak start to the year. Gross domestic product for the second quarter was 2.6%. And while that was more than double the revised economic output of the first 3 months of the year, it was slightly below expectations. Consumers ramped up their spending and businesses invested more on equipment. Inflation, though, retreated and wage growth decelerated, despite an economy that's considered to be at or near full employment.
It was the best week of the year for oil prices after rising today for a fifth straight session. Domestic crude up more than 8% this week as crude and gasoline inventories fell more than expected, and Saudi Arabia said it would reduce future oil output. That alleviated some oversupply concerns. But the price of oil varied widely in the second quarter. That hurt Exxon Mobil's results, but not doing much damage, really, to Chevron's quarter. Shares of the country's two largest oil producers moved in opposite directions. Chevron, the best-performing Dow stock today. Exxon, the worst. Jackie DeAngelis has more.
Investors weren't expecting much from ExxonMobil. That's why this earnings miss really stings. The wide range in crude prices is partially to blame, even though they were higher than they were a year ago. The other reason is weak performance from Exxon's exploration and production business. The downstream business, that's refining, was stronger but weak here in the United States. CEO Darren Woods said the company's job is, quote, to grow long-term value by investing in our integrated portfolio of opportunities that succeed regardless of market conditions. Since Woods took over on January 1st, succeeding Rex Tillerson, who is now Secretary of State, Exxon has faced accusations of sanctions violations, probes into whether the company hid data on climate change, and questions about how it would grow oil output. It's a slightly different story for rival Chevron, the second largest U.S. driller behind Exxon. It swung to a profit thanks to higher than expected output from its wells, even as returns from its refining business shrank. What will be key for both companies is how they proceed going forward. With oil just under $50 a barrel, do they keep drilling or do they pare back and allow prices to stabilize? The U.S. is the swing producer right now. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Jackie DeAngelis.
Still ahead, profit and performance should mean fewer headaches for American Airlines, right? Well, that's not really the case. Billions of dollars in market cap went up in smoke. Shares of the big tobacco companies fell after the FDA said it wants to cut nicotine in cigarettes to non-addictive levels. Such a move would represent a sweeping federal effort to reduce smoking, since Congress required cigarette packages to carry health warnings. Altria and British American Tobacco were hit hard. Aditi Roy has the details.
Nearly 90% of all adult smokers started the habit before they were 18 and then became hooked. That's the premise of the Food and Drug Administration's sweeping new plan to regulate tobacco and nicotine.
We need to take a fresh look at nicotine itself.
The goal is to save lives. In its statement announcing the news, the agency said, unless we change course, 5.6 million young people alive today will die prematurely later in life from tobacco use. The agency also reports a direct health care and lost productivity costs stemming from tobacco use add up to nearly $300 billion. To meet its goal, the FDA wants to lower nicotine levels in cigarettes to non-addictive levels and will take measures that will, quote, make tobacco products less toxic, appealing, and addictive.
But it's the other chemical compounds in tobacco and in the smoke created by setting tobacco on fire that directly and primarily cause the illness and death, not the nicotine.
In other words, the FDA commissioner says by curbing the nicotine, more people will quit smoking and won't be exposed to the more harmful elements of cigarettes. Upon the news, shares of cigarette stocks like Altria and British American Tobacco plummeted. But some analysts say the regulations could help the market for cigarette alternatives. Some tobacco companies, like Altria, are developing less harmful products like smokeless tobacco and e-cigarettes.
I think the economics aren't as good right now, but as the market develops, and perhaps with these changes, there'll be a greater push, an acceleration of growth in electronic cigarettes, that longer term, the economics could improve.
He adds companies have some time before the regulations would take effect. Before the plan can go into motion, the FDA will have a public comment period. It's unclear when that will start or how long that will take. Then the agency will evaluate the comments before finalizing the plan. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Aditi Roy, San Francisco.
American Airlines reported better than expected earnings for the second quarter. Like other carriers, demand is strong at the world's biggest airline, and that is pushing up average fares, fees, and overall revenue. Meanwhile, the company's CEO says American is not backing off its fight to stop the growth of Persian Gulf carriers in the U.S. Phil LeBeau reports from Fort Worth, Texas, where American is headquartered.
For American Airlines, business is taking off thanks to strong demand and an industry-leading ability to drive greater passenger revenue. In fact, revenue per available seat mile is up almost 6%, in part because about half of the American passengers who buy a basic economy ticket are paying more to upgrade to a main cabin seat where they have more options to choose from.
We had revenue growth, unit revenue growth, of almost 6%. It's more than the industry's up. It's evidence to us that the investments we're making in our product and our people are working.
2485.
For Parker, the profit and performance his team posted last quarter should mean fewer headaches for American. But that's not happening thanks to Qatar Airways. The Middle East carrier wants to buy up to 10% of American, even though Parker has repeatedly criticized Qatar for using government subsidies to expand flights to the U.S., a practice that Parker says has hurt American and other U.S. carriers.
We'll see where this all ends up, but the reality is those three carriers are subsidized by their governments, and they're competing against American Airlines and other U.S. carriers in an unfair way, and it shouldn't be allowed.
While American pushes back against Qatar, its core business remains strong, with a healthy economy driving demand and international travel not slowing down. And even as costs rise, due in part to new labor contracts, Doug Parker believes American is poised to fly even higher as it heads into the remainder of this year. Phil LeBeau, Nightly Business Report, Fort Worth, Texas.
Merck tops expectations, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The pharmaceutical company said cost cuts and strong demand for its top-selling cancer drug, Keytruda, led to the higher-than-expected earnings. Merck also said the international cyber attack back in June, which disrupted its manufacturing operations, would indeed cut into profits for the remainder of this year. The company did, however, raise its sales outlook. Shares rose slightly to $64.11. Goodyear said higher raw material costs and weaker demand for tires hurt results in the latest quarter. Despite seeing a drop in profit, the company reported earnings that were in line with estimates, but sales missed the mark. The company also cut its outlook for their tire unit sales and segment operating income. Shares fell more than 8% to $32.51. The furniture and electronics rental company Aaron's reported a better-than-expected rise in sales as the company kept a tight lid on costs and benefited from growth in its progressive leasing division. Earnings also beat analysts' expectations and shares took off, rising 17% to $47.54.
Magellan Health missed estimates as the healthcare company said it experienced pricing pressure in two of its commercial accounts. Revenue, however, edged higher and was stronger than expected. Shares of Magellan Health off more than 3.5% on the session at $75.90. And the online real estate broker Redfin went public on the NASDAQ today. The company offered more than 9 million shares at $15 apiece. Redfin shares, look what they did, soaring 44% in their debut. They closed the day at $21.70.
A quarter of the S&P 500's climb this year is due to five stocks: Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google's parent Alphabet, and Apple. Our market monitor says some of those big tech names are ones you may want to own. This is his first appearance as our market monitor guest, though he has been on the program before. We welcome back Ernesto Ramos, portfolio manager at BMO Global Asset Management. Ernesto, nice to see you again. Welcome. Right to your picks. You pick Apple. You say that they have yet to enter the hot new markets such as virtual reality, original content, and things like that.
Yes, indeed. Apple is essentially an iPhone maker, and they are tapping that market very well, but they have not yet really realize the full potential of other areas of the market that they have products that they're bringing to market. So we think they have potential for growth in new areas, and they still have a magnificent cash cow in their iPhone. And the new iPhone 8 release in September will be a pretty big event, similar to what the iPhone 6 release was a couple of years ago. So we think this stock trading at below market valuation is a very good pick for both its valuation and its growth characteristics.
Ernesto, your second choice is another tiny little company that nobody's heard of that also begins with the letter A.
That's the flip to Apple. It's Amazon, I'm sure you're talking about.
You bet.
And that stock is valued through the roof, but its growth is just incredible. They've posted, I can't remember off the top of my head, how many consecutive quarters of 20-plus percent sales growth. And their earnings fluctuate simply as a function of how much they're investing back into their business on any given quarter. So,
that number last night didn't bother you at all?
No. No. What I'm looking at, what we're looking at is the top-line growth and the disruption that that Amazon is bringing to markets. You know, they started as an online bookseller, or actually online bookseller, but selling physical books. Then they went into other areas of the market, and now they're basically trying to enter any area where the consumer might want to spend money. They want to be present there.
Right.
And Jeff Bezos is succeeding pretty much at anything he tries. So we're excited about this company, despite the very rich valuation.
Let's quickly move on to Microsoft. I'm now a major player in cloud. They've really shifted their business model consistently.
Well, Microsoft is sort of a hybrid between Apple and Amazon. They're disruptors in the sense that they're adapting their business out of the legacy software and computers into the iCloud, and in particular the hybrid iCloud, where the users can not only tap into the iCloud but leverage their existing infrastructures to combine the both, which is most of the companies in the U.S., such as our own company. We're still in the Microsoft world, and now we have access to iCloud, and that is a new area, and they're doing it very well.
On that note, Ernesto, thank you. Ernesto Ramos with BMO Global Asset Management.
Coming up, they're young, they're hip, and they're fueling the growth of, would you believe it, the RV market. The Treasury Secretary tonight sent an update as to when the country will reach its debt limit. That new date is September 29th. Steve Mnuchin says the nation will run out of cash to meet its obligations on that date.
Wells Fargo improperly charged more than 570,000 auto loan customers for auto insurance they did not need or were not told about. The bank debited the borrowers' bank accounts for that coverage. Members of the military on active duty were among those harmed. The bank will make $80 million in payments to compensate customers. Wells Fargo was fined $180 million last year for opening as many as 2 million accounts without customers' permission.
Get your motor running. More RVs are heading out on the highway these days, but it's not retirees who are looking for adventure. Landon Dowdy tells us about the new crop of drivers hitting the road from Petaluma, California.
Kyle Millard is 32 years old and is on his second RV. He grew up camping and takes his young family on the road every month in the summertime.
We picked this one because it has a bunkhouse system in the back as well as the outside kitchen. So it's something we can grow family-wise.
A record 9 million U.S. households now own an RV, according to the Recreation Vehicle Industry Association. The industry has traditionally relied on retirees to drive growth, but now younger buyers are getting behind the wheel.
It just allows us to come together in a different way and sort of, as you can see, just be how we are in a fun way. But we also save money so we can go do some things that we might not otherwise get to do if we stayed in a hotel.
When we come for Thanksgiving specifically, we have probably 4 to 5 trailers that come, and we all book spots right by each other. And then we have a couple family members who like to come but don't have trailers, so they get cabins so that they can still be with us and enjoy the trip too.
Younger buyers are opting more for towable trailers than the more expensive motorhomes, and they're coming to campgrounds like this one here in California wine country to really experience the outdoor lifestyle trend.
And that has campground owners like Chris Wood investing in things like Wi-Fi and communal areas for millennials to mingle.
For the millennial generation, you know, we're looking at space here on the campground, which was set up for potlucks and bingo halls 30 years ago. And we're setting it up for what we call third spaces, similar to kind of like your Starbucks and stuff.
New data shows June towable shipments popped 20% year over year, while motorhomes were up a more modest 6%. RV makers like Thor Industries are taking note of the towable takeover, offering new models tailored to entry-level buyers and updated with new technology.
It's upgrading the electronics. It's just adding the features that they're used to. So a lot of the RVs are compatible to, you know, an iPhone. You know, a lot of the app-based things that, you know, run your AC, your awning, your jacks when you get there. It just makes it easier to camp.
Martin telling me that once buyers get RVing in their blood, they get hooked. Still, analysts warn that while millennials are showing interest in RVing, it's too early to know if those young buyers will drive the industry like the boomers did. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Landon Dowdy, Petaluma, California.
And that is Nightly Business Report tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us.
And I'm Tyler Matheson. Thanks for me as well. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you back here Monday.